Super Talk 1270, you're tuned to Talk of the Town. I'm Steve Bakken, and joining us on the program, Stacy Schaffer with the 318 Project, and brought in a guest, too. So we're going to introduce her in just a minute, too, because unfortunately, and I say this, you're expanding. Your business is growing, and that's kind of a sad story. We'll get to that in just a few minutes, but thanks for coming in today.
Yes, thanks for having me back.
You guys got a lot of things going on. First of all, Stacy, new location. You guys moved.
Mm-hmm. We moved in Bismarck, so we have a lot more space than we did before. So to your point, one of those things that we don't want to have to expand, but of course the need is there. So we have a bigger office space, and we actually just launched a satellite office in Dickinson as well. So we are, you know, we've always been statewide, but now we have two different office locations.
So where are you at now in Bismarck?
So in Bismarck, we are in what used to be the old bowling alley. So if people are familiar where that's at, or where Voc Rehab used to be, we took over their space. So that's where we're at.
Outstanding. So let's back up a little bit. For those that aren't familiar with the 318 Project, to explain that to our listeners.
For sure. So 318 Project, we launched in 2015. And when we started, our main focus was to raise educational awareness on topics like human trafficking, sexual exploitation, pornography, as well as social media safety. But from there, we've expanded and we have a Bravery Backpack program that works with children ages 2 to 17 that are victims of a crime. So anytime they're a victim of a crime, they can be more vulnerable to things like human trafficking. So that's why we give them those support bags. And then we have direct services where we work with adult survivors of human trafficking that are ages 18 plus. So they're paired with a mentor. That mentor helps them to achieve anywhere from 2 to 3 goals. Sometimes it's more goals, anything from getting a GED, to starting a business to, we have one survivor that just got accepted to the social work program at Minot State University. So,
outstanding.
So that's awesome. I mean, the goals range from various different things. And then we also have a support group that meets every other week as well. So just making sure that they're supported and able to reintegrate into the community more smoothly.
We haven't talked a little bit about where your impetus came. What was your motivation for getting involved with this and trying to make a difference?
Yeah. So in 2006 is when I really became interested in the topic. And it was at that time that I learned that slavery still existed. So definitely a little bit naive. We always think of slavery dating back into like the 1800s, but it was still alive and if anything, growing. So that just stirred something up in me and led me over to Guatemala, where I experienced my first case of human trafficking with a little girl named Anna. She was 8 years old at the time. And we don't typically see this in North Dakota the way it was portrayed in Guatemala, but she was taken from a playground and brought to a brothel where she was repeatedly sexually abused over and over again. Now, regardless of who you are or your ages, that's going to be a traumatic event. And it was for Anna, and we were fortunately able to intervene, which is very uncommon in underdeveloped areas. So we were able to provide her with services, and she went on to live a pretty stable life. She ended up getting married, having kids, and is doing well. So she's really my motivation and inspiration for launching 318 Project in 2015.
What's the recovery process in something like that? Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, there's emotional scarring forever.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How do you help somebody deal with that side of it? Because I can't think of anything more traumatic.
Honestly, it's a lifelong process. That's the challenging piece. We have survivors that have been out of the life, that's what we refer to it, for over 17 years, and they're still struggling, but they're working on themselves, but it's a continuous battle in a way. So we're there to always support them and help them however we can, but the healing process isn't as simple as I think people would like to see. You never know what can trigger you. So our goal is to set them up with the skills so when they are triggered that they don't go back to something that's dangerous or relapse in some capacity, but instead they have the tools to keep moving forward.
And there's a lot of different trafficking categories.
Absolutely.
You know most often people think about sex trafficking or, you know, somebody that gets into prostitution or, you know, the question is why, you know, that's a symptom. What's the cause?
Yes.
Yeah, but there's labor force trafficking. There's so many different aspects of this. And I want to get into those in a little bit, but I want to give us an opportunity to visit with grace. I mean,
yes,
so
for sure.
Again, you guys are growing. There's mm-hmm. a need out there. You got a new employee, Grace
yes,
Loeb, joining
yes,
us.
Yes, for
this
sure.
morning.
So, yes, with me is Grace Loeb, and I'll give her a chance to introduce herself.
Grace, how did you get involved? How did you? How did this become a passion for you and some place that you wanted to work?
I became very passionate about human trafficking. It's been part of my life for a very long time. I know personally people who have been exploited and abused in ways, and I became interested in researching it in high school. I started giving presentations on it for assignments in high school, and so I went to college for psychology, and I needed an internship, and so I was connected with a local human trafficking nonprofit, the 318 Project, for my internship, and that ended up being the perfect fit for me. So I stayed there for my internship and was brought on board officially as an employee in January of 2024.
Okay, and for our listeners, you know, you're young. I mean, you're young getting into this, and you mentioned the high school. I mean, how did you get involved with this back in high school and start following that passion, going, hey, I want to make a difference, and there's a need here? I mean, that's pretty aware for a high school kid.
It was, probably an interesting upbringing. I have brothers who are in the law enforcement community, and one brother is a Green Beret in the United States military.
Thank you for his service.
Yes, wow. Absolutely.
That's incredible.
Yes, he is an amazing individual. I had an interesting situation, though. I actually went to school away from my family and my parents. So my family is from North Dakota, but I went to school in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. And one of the stipulations of me being away from my family was I needed to be very aware of my surroundings and to be very prepared to defend myself or to prevent anything from happening to me.
Well, I'm guessing with a brother that's a Green Beret, you probably learned a few tricks and maybe leaned on Big Brother a little bit.
Yeah, something like that. Something like that. Yep. But in any case, my family wanted me to never have to get to the point of using any kind of physical protection, but to protect myself with my awareness first.
And well, going back to that, you know, just we see situations that people get into, and I tell my wife's a runner, and she's out on the trails and running, and I tell her this all the time, be aware of your surroundings.
Absolutely.
I mean, so talk a little bit about that from the perspective of how do you prevent getting into bad situations? Because, you know, you saw that on college campuses, out in communities. You know, we talked about little girl on a playground, mm-hmm. You know, cases where somebody's in a parking lot picking up groceries, loading them in the back of your car. You're not aware of your surroundings, mm-hmm. and bad things can happen. We don't think about those things happening in North Dakota, but they happen.
Absolutely. I think one of the trials that we're certainly facing is we live in a technological and digital age in which we are so infused into things that take our attention away from our surroundings, whether that's earbuds and headphones or walking with our heads down in our cellular devices. We're always connected into the social, technological side and not necessarily with our surroundings. And so as far as protecting yourself, those things are all good and fine. But if you're in an environment where you're vulnerable, which is essentially anytime you're walking by yourself, then you need to be sure that you're aware of what's happening around you. And sometimes people think that automatically means that you're super paranoid and that you're worried that you're going to be attacked at any moment. And that's not how I live my life. And I don't think that's how anyone who is aware lives their life. It's just learning to be cautious and aware.
There's a difference between always keeping your guard up and just being aware of your surroundings.
Certainly.
And the situations that potentially could arise.
Absolutely.
So, it's not like living on the edge where you're always in fear of something, but you do have to be aware, and there is a difference. We're talking with Grace Loeb and Stacy Schaffer with the 318 Project. This is Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270. SuperDoc 1270, you're tuned to Talk of the Town. I'm Steve Bach, and we're talking with Stacy Schaffer and Grace Loeb with the 318 Project. Stacy, I wanted to get into the different types of trafficking. Most often we think about sex trafficking. That's probably a good place to start, but there's a lot of different other categories of trafficking. So you and I were talking a little bit during the break about sextortion. Mm-hmm. Explain to that to our listeners this morning.
For sure. So sextortion is its own category, but when we talk about things like sex trafficking, pornography, sexual exploitation, sextortion, they all overlap oftentimes in different ways. So that's why we talk about all those topics as one. So what we're seeing with sextortion is a lot of youth are being targeted, where you have this person who pops up online, whether it's Instagram, Snapchat, etc. There's lots of different apps out there, and will portray themselves. Like, let's say you're a young female and there's this young attractive male talking to you, or the picture shows like a young attractive male, and they ask you to send a sexually explicit photo of yourself, and you decide to do that. Then the next response is, well, if you don't give me $1,000, I'm going to send this to all your friends. So we're seeing a lot of those situations that happen across the state. And it's really scary because these youth, they're very embarrassed. They don't want to tell anybody what's going on. And for some, they've gone as far as taking their own lives because of that shame. And what we really stress when we talk to kids is nothing, like $300, $1,000, whatever the dollar amount, is not worth taking your life for. So getting kids to understand that, but also don't share those types of personal information.
How much of this comes back to just good education, whether it's parents communicating and within the schools, and you know, we all need to be a little guarded about what's online. And honest to God, I'm glad I grew up when I grew up, but kids have no concept that once it's out digitally, it's there forever.
Yes.
So you have to make good decisions, and that's the education piece.
Yep. Absolutely. And that's why it's so important.
Is it just education, or what are some of the other...
Education's part of it, but if you're going to give a child technology, and I'm not shaming that at all, right? Like if a kid's using some form of technology, I'm not saying it's bad, but you have to teach them how to use it appropriately. So the average age of a child that has a cell phone right now is a second grader. So just think about that.
Well, that's been a debate for a long time. It's like, what's too young for... Mm-hmm. For a cell phone.
Right.
You know, I remember where it's, 16 and 14 and 12. And I'm like, now it's like I get a new cell phone. And I'm like, well, how do I work this? I hand it to a six-year-old.
Exactly. You know,
seriously. And that's the position a lot of parents have gotten into, because I grew up in an age, and you probably did too, where, not right or wrong, but if you needed a little downtime as a parent, the television was probably your babysitter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now it's that electronic device. It's that tablet or that cell phone. Here, give the kid that, and then I get some downtime.
Yes, exactly. And you don't know what's going to pop up unless you have restrictions put on that device, but also having conversations like what's a good picture versus a bad picture. And there's so many resources out there now that you can have these conversations with your kids. Like if you don't know how to say it yourself, there's literally books that are geared for young people that you can read to them, called Good Pictures, Bad Pictures. So that's a big thing. I always tell parents, do not let your kids take devices into their rooms, because a lot of times what's happening is as soon as that door shuts, this type of activity is taking place. So it's like
kids are curious.
Exactly. So you can control some of that.
Yeah, they're going to go places that they probably shouldn't go because they're curious and they're pushing the envelope.
Exactly. So that's a big thing that we stress, and just understanding what's real and what's not, right? Unfortunately, AI has become a really big trend, and I'm not saying anything bad about that either, right? Because you can use it.
Become that next iteration of technology, the artificial intelligence. We talk about this.
Exactly.
You know, in one form or another on this show, we talk about the technology and artificial intelligence. Marlo Anderson and I talk about AI a lot in some of this programming that we do. And there's a lot of positives, but we don't know all the negative side of that. And you and I were talking about one situation that turned very dark with AI.
Yes, we had a young high schooler in North Dakota who just really struggled with having friendships, and AI became his best friend. And so he really utilized AI to have conversations and just for somebody, I guess, to be there for support. And he got to a point where he asked AI, he said to AI, I think I want to commit suicide. And AI said, I think that's a good idea. Here's how you can do that. Now, not exactly in those words, but gave tips of how to do it. And he ended up going through with committing suicide. And so that's a big thing for us to talk to kids about too, is understanding like how technology, if we don't again use it appropriately, how you could have an experience like that happen.
You know, you and I have talked in the past about kids at risk, But a lot of what we're talking about, because of technology nowadays, it's not kids you typically think are at risk.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's open to this. I mean,
absolutely.
Anybody can be a victim. Anybody can be targeted.
Mm-hmm.
You and I have talked about the cyberbullying stuff a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the AI thing was just a great example. I mean,
yep.
That doesn't necessarily have to be a child at risk that went through that suicide path.
Yep.
I mean, that could be anybody.
Yes.
So,
exactly. Yeah.
I think what we have to do is redefine or shift that paradigm of what we consider at-risk youth, because all kids can be at risk.
Mm-hmm.
All kids are at risk.
Absolutely. Yes. Like we always say, I mean, are there certain things that make people more vulnerable? Absolutely. But in regards to this, yeah. I mean, anybody can be at risk if you don't know how to use technology properly. And of course, depending where you're at and with your life situation too, of how do you have, who do you surround with, who is your support system, etc. And so all of those things make a difference for sure.
Okay, so I want to ask Grace this because, you know, we talk about younger kids, Stacey, but, okay, Grace, you going through college and just recently being out of college, from the cyber side of things, and what did you see as a college student? Because it's not just elementary, middle school, high school, and we probably don't talk about it very often, but what did you see as a college student? I mean, it's out there as well. So a lot of these things that can affect young people, it's at any stage.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I graduated high school in 2020. And so my entire college track was taken down a different route because of the pandemic. So I ended up completing, my entire college education online. So
on behalf of the federal government, I apologize for that. Okay.
And so I had to make sure that all of my correspondence was official and applicable to my education, but it was all online. So I had all of my relationships with my professors and my fellow students, whether it was through our academic portal or email, everything was online.
We could do an entire show on how hard was that.
Oh, it was difficult, but it was interesting because I was able to work full-time through college and graduate without any debt. So that's a different subject. There's a positive.
Kudos
there.
For you.
Yes, but I do think it was very important to balance my technological interaction. And so actually, because I was online and communicating so much through technology, I limited my social media a lot because I was burnt out from being on the computer or my phone so much that I didn't have a lot of social media correspondence during the time that I was in college. And frankly, I think that probably helped me a lot because that took me away from maybe some of those risks. But the reality is, I had several times where our email system would have a bug in it just from my college, and a random person would be emailing us, and I had no idea who that was. And if I would have responded to that, whether I would have gotten viruses or someone would have gotten my personal information, whatever, it's just being aware that if you don't know that person, don't talk to them. Don't talk to them. If you don't know them personally, don't friend them on Facebook or even talk to them from your own university if you don't know who they are.
We're talking with Grace Loeb and Stacey Schaffer at the 318 Project. This is Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270. Super Talk 1270, we're talking with Stacey Schaffer and Grace Loeb with the 318 Project, talking about different categories of trafficking, because we think about sex trafficking a lot, but there's so many different avenues of trafficking. You were telling me that workforce trafficking, labor trafficking, that's something on the rise that we maybe not everybody's aware of.
Yes, for sure. So, for instance, last quarter, 318 Project worked with 32 different victims of human trafficking. And in that amount, right now in one area in North Dakota, there are 15 cases that we have dealing with labor trafficking.
Wow.
So I think it's important that people realize that it's not just the sex trafficking that's going on. It's definitely the labor trafficking. And we have more and more industries that want to learn more about it because they believe that it's either happening within their sector or that they're seeing it while they're working. And so it's important to understand it's not just the sex trafficking piece that's out there. There's labor. The other thing too, and this is harder to detect, but I mean, there's organ trafficking, child soldiers, mail order brides. All of those different categories have the potential to be at risk for trafficking situations. So it's hard to identify, though, but it's important that we recognize it's not just the sex trafficking piece we need to be aware of.
Okay, I want to come back to the labor trafficking in just a second, but organ trafficking?
Yes, yep.
So, okay, and the first thing that popped into my head is, you know, the old horror films of somebody waking up in a bathtub full of ice and, where'd my kidney go? But that actually happens.
It does, and actually the most sought out organ is the kidney. And the reason is because the wait list to receive a kidney is astronomical. And so people are going, you know, to find different ways of which they can get an organ. And so often what we're seeing how this happens is, let's say you need that organ. And so you hire a broker. That broker typically goes to an underdeveloped country, some village, and they offer that person, hey, we'll give you $2,000 for your kidney. Now, if you're somebody who has been living in poverty majority of your life,
$2,000 is probably more than you would make in your entire lifetime.
Exactly. And now somebody's willing to give that to you if you give them your organ, and then they in turn sell that organ for like $200,000. And so there's actually facilities throughout the world where they will fly you there to have this operation done. And sometimes you're aware of where the organ's coming from, and sometimes you don't know. So then the other risk you run is this even a good organ that I'm receiving? Because that's been the issue too, is that the transplant doesn't take because that person you're getting the kidney from has some other type of disease or illness that they're dealing with, but nobody checked.
So then you have rejection and all, because...
Yes.
Organs have to be, and I'm a donor. I mean, everybody should be a donor, but having the right so it matches up. You know, it's funny, we were talking about technology a little bit, and now they have the ability to grow kidneys with, you know, AI is part of that rapid expanse of medical growth. And that is one of the places that, shining moment, and we talk about AI and the technology and the dark side a little bit, but that's a positive. And so hopefully some of that technology be able to mitigate things like that.
Absolutely. The other issue we've seen with it too is in some countries there might be a lack of a certain blood type. And so we've even seen people recruited for a certain blood type, right? Or certain types of tissue, things like that, where areas are lacking. So yes, it can get very graphic as well of how that particular operation works. But
so the term trafficking can go into a lot of different dark nooks and crannies that we just don't think about.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Because it's not being reported either.
Yeah.
You know, people aren't necessarily talking about those instances or able to detect it either. You know, it's kind of hard to look at a scenario and be like, is that what it is? So I think there's that too, of just a lack of awareness. Like even with labor trafficking, for quite a while in North Dakota, we were training people on how to identify sex trafficking, but it's only been in the past couple of years where we're really looking at how to identify labor.
So explain the labor trafficking side, because I think that's an area that a lot of people aren't aware of. So when you're looking at the labor trafficking, you know, we have that in North Dakota, and people are like, what?
Exactly. And I think a lot of people assume with labor trafficking, it's people that are brought here illegally and then forced into an industry to work. That can happen. But out of those, that case I
and
told
it is
you,
happening.
It is.
In but, North Dakota.
Yep. But out of the 15 that, like the current 15 that we're working with, only two of them were smuggled here. The rest were brought here legally on a visa program. And once they got here, they were taken advantage of through that visa program. And this has all been through the hospitality industry. So hospitality is a big one. Agricultural work can be a big one too, where we see labor trafficking
occurring.
Typically
you think of places where there's a big workforce shortage.
Yep.
And that's where the vulnerability lies.
Yep. And if you're coming from a different country and you don't know, I mean, just think when you visit another country, you don't know all the rules and the laws, right? And so you rely on the person that's guiding you to share that. And if you want to be that person who abuses and misuses people, you have a perfect opportunity to do that when you're bringing people in on a visa program. And not all people do that. I want to be clear, because North Dakota is in the top 10 states in the nation of bringing the most people in on the H-2A and the H-2B visa, which is our hospitality and agricultural work. So we need the workers.
Huge.
Yes. So it can be used appropriately, but you can easily manipulate the system if you wanted to.
So who's looking at manipulating the system? Because I if you're thinking, and just staying in the workforce vein, mm-hmm. if you're thinking of, okay, who's the benefactor? Is it the companies that are acquiring this? Because people think of it in terms of cheap labor.
Mm-hmm.
But from some of the stories I've heard is these companies may not know that they're having trafficked labor working
right.
for them as well.
You're right.
Which is really a weird scenario to me.
It is. So, for instance, two clients that we worked with, that we are working with, they were brought here on a visa program to work at two different hotels. So it was in Dickinson and Bismarck. Now, the hotel they were working in, that hotel had hired a recruiter. And it turned out the recruiter was the trafficker. So the one hotel in Dickinson was aware of what was going on, but the hotel in Bismarck thought that when they would pay the recruiter, that the recruiter was paying these individuals, when in fact the recruiter was withholding the money, putting them up in really bad living conditions, charging them for toilet paper to eat. Like, so they were constantly in debt, right? Like the debt bondage. So they could never move ahead. So that it does make an interesting case of what we look at. Then in that case, who should be charged? The recruiter and the business? Or just the recruiter or just the business, right? And so that's...
So the common theme here for a lot of this is mm-hmm. it's that middleman, it's that broker in
yes.
between
mm-hmm.
that is the nefarious character in a lot of this.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, we see that or hear about it a lot with what's happening down on the southern border and the people coming across, that
mm-hmm.
the debt bondage is
yep.
a huge piece because, I mean, is that the common... leverage
for sure.
most people is, okay, you're in debt because you're trying to get into a better situation
mm-hmm.
and you're being sold a bill of goods, and that bill is at a really steep price.
Yep.
You're never going to get out of that. So you're beholden to those people who illegally got you across the border, or however that process worked, if you went through the visa process.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it comes down to holes in our system and shortcuts.
For sure. Yeah, debt bondage is definitely one of the biggest factors, especially in labor trafficking, is holding that debt. So you can never, and a lot of times these individuals are trying to make money to send back to their families, right? And so they can never get ahead. And then a lot of times these recruiters are saying, you know, it cost me $10,000 to apply for this visa to get you here. Well, that's not true. That's not how much it costs. But again, you don't
but
know
they don't
that.
Know.
Exactly. So your family leverages everything to get you here, and then you're in debt. So that's the
wow.
unfortunate piece of what we see.
We're talking mm-hmm. with Stacey Schaffer and Grace Loeb with the 31-8 Project, talking about trafficking this morning. This is Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270. Super Talk 1270, you're tuned to Talk of the Town. I'm Steve Bakken, and we're talking with Stacey Schaffer and Grace Loeb with the 31-8 Project. 31-8 Project focuses on trafficking. And when you're talking trafficking, there's a lot of different levels of trafficking. And most people, especially in North Dakota, where we're a little insulated, mm-hmm. We think about sex trafficking, but there's so much more to trafficking. And that's what the 38-1 Project does. It focuses mm-hmm. on all the different avenues of traffic. Explain those avenues. What are
for
the
sure.
different categories of trafficking for our listeners?
Yep. So it's not limited to this, but the most common that we see, we have sex trafficking, labor trafficking, organ trafficking, child soldiers, mail order brides, or even drug trafficking. All of these different categories can interweave with one another, and sometimes people can even be trafficked for more than one. So it's not uncommon for us to have cases where people are both trafficked for sex and labor. We've had that in North Dakota, so that can happen as well, but those are the most common types of scenarios that we see. Again, like that organ trafficking piece, child soldiers, mail order brides, pieces like that, not as common here. But for sure, sex and labor, we do see quite a bit of.
So I'm guessing it's just what it sounds. What's a child soldier?
Mm-hmm. So this is usually where you're going to see in a more of a war-torn area where kids are recruited to literally fight in battle, or they might be used as suicide bombers by that particular community or that government. And so it's like all the maybe their parents have all been killed in some type of capacity, and now they're recruited to basically fight in battle.
And they become disposable commodities.
Exactly. Yep. So they're just used and abused. Yeah. So not just for the suicide piece, but also we see sex trafficking in these situations as well.
Well, and we see a great example of what's coming across the southern border right mm-hmm. now, where there's multiples because there's mm-hmm. people that are being used for sex trafficking and drug mules and the labor. And
yep.
I mean, those folks that are put into those positions and being smuggled or escorted across an open border mm-hmm. with the cartels.
For sure.
So the cartels in this case are the brokers.
Yep. I mean, you have cartels, you have gangs play a lot of part in some of this as well. And that's the thing is for some people, they think, you know, smuggling and trafficking is two different things. Like smuggling, you are consenting to, right? But what's often happening with people is they think they're being smuggled to do this specific thing, and then they get over here and it's like...
That's where the overlap takes place.
Exactly, and that's where we see the shift is, well, that's what I told you, but now this is what you're really going to do, and if you don't do this, your family back home is going to be hurt. And so again, those threats are real, and you don't know if it's true or not.
Because whether it's a threat of violence, threat of familial violence, mm-hmm. or... financial, it's about the leverage that they hold over those individuals that are being trafficked.
Exactly. Exactly. It's all about that power and control.
So more going on in North Dakota than what we see. In fact, you are going to be having a lot of conversations with a lot mm-hmm. of the oil industry, because we haven't really talked about the oil industry for a while. Mm-hmm. On the labor side of stuff, there's companies that are aware of, hey, are we getting employees that are being trafficked, or are we getting good employees?
Yes. Yep. So this has definitely become more of a topic for a lot of the oil companies that we're working with that have concerns. Again, to your point, not just for people that they're hiring, but for jobs that they are completing when people are working. How did they get here? How is that employer treating them, et cetera? And so it's definitely become more clear that something else is going on, which is good. We're talking about it.
Right, and because you got to drag it out of the closet to fix it. And a lot of companies are being proactive and having that conversation because they don't want people that are being trafficked as employees. They want mm-hmm. employees that can benefit and flourish from their labor themselves.
Exactly. Exactly. And you want to do it the right way,
yeah.
right? Because there's a lot of repercussions yeah. if you get caught doing it the wrong way.
We try to do things the right way in North Dakota, but
yes.
again, a lot of things going on in North Dakota people just aren't aware of. And I want to give us the benefit of the doubt saying that mm-hmm. we're not sticking our head in the sand, but there are things that you think would never happen in North Dakota.
Absolutely.
But they are. Mm-hmm. You know, going to stopping trafficking or fixing trafficking, I don't know if you can fully stop it. That would be the goal. But,
it would be.
But
yeah.
improving things. You guys have a lot of great events coming up for fundraising because, of course,
yes.
between the partnerships and the ability to fundraise, to throw mm-hmm. resources at the issues, you know, you
yes,
got some events
for
coming
sure.
up.
Yes, and I'm going to turn it over to Grace because she's in charge of our programs.
Oh, yeah. So that's part of your job with 31A Project. So.
Yep, yep. So I'm the program coordinator. But coming up, we have specifically, this isn't a fundraiser, but this is one of the biggest events of the year. It's our Bakken Human Trafficking Summit. It's a mobile program, so it moves across the state every single year. We've been in Williston and Watford City and Dickinson, but this year we are in Minot on May 21st and 22nd. So it's a two-day conference. It is open to the general public, but we are seeing some really amazing content coming in for the Bakken Human Trafficking Summit this year. It's going to be touching a lot on labor trafficking. So some of those things that are difficult to understand or confusing even for law enforcement for how to catch those things or charge these kinds of cases, we have some impressive speakers coming in to talk about that. Talking about pornography and that the tie to human trafficking in that way, child exploitation and child trafficking. We're having a lot of good content come in for Bakken. So, yeah.
Looking forward to that. Some of the other events you got coming up throughout the course of the year. I know the golf outing is one of favorites for a lot of people.
Yes, golf, or as we lovingly refer to it at 31-8 Project, it's the Battle of the Banks. We see a lot of our wonderful community partners coming in that are from our various banking representatives. And so it's a really good time. That's on June 20th. Registration starts at 9 o'clock that morning at Hawk Tree Golf Club. But there's a shotgun start at 10 o'clock, so make sure that you don't miss that. Otherwise, we have the soiree. It's the Harvest Moon Soiree, and that is coming up in October. So we're starting discussions about that, getting that underway, but it's going to be another beautiful event at 1603 Events in Bismarck.
We'll talk about a lot of those events as they come up, but again, golf, everybody's a big fan of golf. The Bakken Human Trafficking Summit, that's a big one. That's one that's really grown. You guys are going to be at the Bakken Oil Summit, of course, that takes place in here every other year. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. having a lot of conversation with a lot of different companies that are doing work out in the Bakken. If people want to get a hold of the 31-8 Project, get involved, find out what's going on, how do they do that? Where do they find that information?
Yes, you can reach out to us on our website. So we're 318project.org. Otherwise, you can call us, email us. We're always ready to accept any volunteer requests, answer any questions, or get you in touch with any of our other representatives to help you either register for an event or just get involved in any capacity.
Grace, nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too.
Grace Loeb and Stacy, always a pleasure. Stacy Schaffer and Grace Loeb, 318 Project. This is Talk of the Town on Super Talk 1270.